Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, episode 34. Now you're playing with power. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. What's up, Internet? This is the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, episode 34, recorded on October the 20th and the 21st, 2015, brought to you by the Happy Hour Network and Rarity.net. I am your sexy party host, Ray Ray. So, if you never heard of this podcast before, and if you never heard of me, I'm mostly an NBA online writer, so most of the time, you'll get some NBA talk, but since it's my podcast, I can talk about whatever I want. Basically my interests. So other sports, video games, anime, wrestling, whatever. I will talk about whatever the heck I want. And we also have two regular features on this podcast. First off, we have Kicking It Old School with Ray Ray and EJ, where we talk about anything nostalgic from the 80s, 90s, or 2000s. And Girls Talk with the Gal Pal Squad, where I talk to my girls from the Gal Pal Squad about mostly their female perspective on things such as fashion and dating or TV shows or whatever. So we're going to get right to it. Our guest for this episode is Sharif Jackson, who is a gamer and who also has a YouTube series called Gaming Looks Good, where they promote diversity in video gaming. So basically, color in the main characters, basically. So we're going to talk about the Nintendo coming out 30 years ago. When I say Nintendo, I meant the 8-bit Nintendo, the Nintendo Entertainment System, the regular Nintendo. So, let's do this! Scratch! Ray Ray is Fundamental, episode 34. This is Ray Ray, always joined by my awesome co-host, Adam Jacoby. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, man? 34. That's a lot of episodes.
That is a lot of episodes. Yeah. Like, I might get to 35 at some point. Our guest, he's been on here before, he's a gamer, he's all about diversity in gaming. Sharif Jackson, what's up?
What's up, man? Let's do it, yo. I'm excited to talk about gaming. I should be gaming right now, but I love you guys so much that that I've stopped. I have paused.
What were you playing?
Well, I wish I was playing. I just got back from work, but I would most likely be playing Destiny, which is my current addiction, video game wise.
What is Destiny? I don't know Destiny.
Destiny is like a first person shooter / MMO, by Bungie, so the original creators of the Halo series. And yeah, so it's like this kind of shared world where you level up and get new gear and like do these big co-op missions with groups of people. It's pretty fun. I enjoy it a lot, immensely, actually.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why we have Sharif on here is because we're going to talk about gaming, and we're going to talk about old school gaming, really, because 30 years ago, the Nintendo Entertainment System was released in North America, to be exact, October 18th, 1985. That is a long time ago, guys.
That's a long time, man. It's
yeah, I know.
It feels even longer because it's not like kind of a faded memory. Like I remember very specifically my early experiences with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, yeah, it kind of came out and I don't remember it. I'm kind of like, no, I remember very clearly.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Was Adam born yet at that point?
Yeah. So like let's be clear. It's fine if things are 30 years old or older. Being in your 30s is totally fine. So let's not have any stigma about things, entertainment systems, perhaps podcast co-hosts that may or may not be in their 30s. It's totally fine. But one of the things that I do have to commend the NES on is its resiliency. Because even for being such a fragile system, I was the last time I saw Nintendo being played was like last year, last summer, when somebody brought one to a bachelor party that we were at, and they were playing, you know, Super Mario 3. Mm-hmm. And, like, the system itself had to have been at least 25 years old, and not only was the person, you know, playing it and doing it well, and they ended up beating the game, even after it, you know, malfunctioned a few times, but, like, everybody was familiar with it. Nobody was like, oh my god, a Nintendo, I've never seen one of those. Like, its cultural currency is unparalleled. None of the other gaming systems are going to have that kind of relevance 30 years. Like nobody's going to talk about the Super Nintendo in 2021. Like, you're not going to see people still bringing one of those out, right?
I might.
Well, okay, you might. But fair.
But can we say that the Nintendo saved video games? Can we say saved because of the crash in 1983, was it, Sharif?
Yeah, I would say it saved, even though Nintendo was a Japanese company, obviously, it saved the, like, video games in America. Like, I still feel like that they would have moved on in other countries, but I feel like a lot of companies, when they saw what happened to Atari, and they saw, like, all these random companies making video games, like General Mills and, you know, all these companies trying to cash in and everything crashing with E.T., that I think a lot of American companies just saw it as a fad and, like, were like, all right, on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for Nintendo to kind of, like, galvanize the American gaming market and pretty much rule it until Sega had some competition, but, like, pretty much rule it until Sony came around. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big games would be in the U.S. or if the U.S. would be considered the predominant gaming market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was looking. Go ahead, Adam.
It's pretty remarkable that not only did the NES galvanize, like you said, the U.S. gaming market, but it did it without a lot of the tools that gaming companies today sort of take for granted. You know, everybody knew, let's say, the Metroid, the Easy Metroid startup code. And everybody knew this secret about Super Mario Brothers 1 or 2 or 3, like how to do this or that. But it's not as if there was an internet to share these things. It's not as if you could just text somebody or email somebody a specific code or a specific set of instructions. The Contra code, for example. Everybody knew the Contra code.
Right.
But, yeah. How would you get that information out to an entire generation of children playing video games today? Like that ability for, you know, something for information like that to spread without modern communication tools. I mean, the best you had going for you was a telephone, is just outstanding, especially because there wasn't a whole lot like that in the industry leading up to it. Like you said, video games were about to die. The market was about to be like, okay, that's enough. And then all of a sudden, everybody knew all these secrets about the Nintendo system. And as from a sociological perspective, it is fascinating.
Yeah. So I was living in the Philippines by the time the Nintendo came out in North America. So, what were the games that made you want to get one in the first place?
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt, I mean, those, they ruled the thing, which was pretty interesting because they weren't huge arcade games. I mean, there definitely was, like, the NES Play Choice
in the arcades. What a ripoff.
But back at that time, it was really Sega that ruled the arcade, right? So the Nintendo games weren't huge in the arcade, so they kind of, took that Super Mario Brothers arcade game, they made it into its own thing, and then they just created Duck Hunt, which was the coolest thing in the world, that you had this like peripheral that you could, you know, actually shoot at the screen. And that stupid dog and all that stuff. I feel like those games, like, they were cool to watch or play. Because I remember, like, my parents, my parents would just sit there and watch. And they've never done that with any other video game that I've ever seen. But, like, they would sit there and watch us play, like, Mario and Duck Hunt and those games. So I think that Mario Duck Hunt, that pack-in was pretty amazing because, you know, platformers didn't really exist. So Mario was like a completely new thing. I mean, like, it was like kind of like, what do you mean the screen moves right? You know?
Yeah. 30 years later, Super Mario Bros. Still holds up to this day, and we still hate the dog from Duck Land.
Agreed.
What also amazes me is just how much success Nintendo got out of a hunting game. It's not as if people were clamoring or to this day clamor for a hunting game. Like, you probably know, let's say out of 100 people that you know, maybe 2 or 3 of them enjoy Big Buck Hunter, you know, at the bars or something like that.
Right.
Maybe 1/10 of that 100 actually own something at home that's along those lines.
Yeah.
And it's not as if hunting was a huge cultural force in America at that time, to say nothing of Japan. So for them to leverage a hunting game, a very, very niche game, just based on the strength of its peripheral, into such outstanding success is once again sort of a jaw-dropping achievement for Nintendo.
Yeah. There were also other games, the simple sports games like baseball and
mm-hmm.
golf.
Yeah.
What definitely stood out, of course, back then was Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yes.
For Nintendo.
Yes.
Yeah. And it is still difficult to this day. Like, mm-hmm. I can't beat Mike Tyson even if I tried right now. You know, it's such a difficult game, but such a legendary game as well.
Yeah, it's a great game because it's less of a boxing game, more of like a puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as Adam said, like yes, there were gaming magazines, but you couldn't just Google how to beat Super Macho Man. Like, it was usually like a very punishing trial and error.
Yeah.
I actually remember I had a sheet where I would write down, like, all right, at this time he's gonna do like this move, because like it was like all based on time, you know.
Yeah.
And even with that, I mean, I've still to this day have not beaten Mike Tyson without the help of like emulator cheat or something. Like, I've not been able to beat him like the traditional way. I just can't do it. Like, he throws knockout punches for like, I think, 2 minutes straight, and I just can't avoid them.
Yeah. Adam, have you beaten Mike Tyson's punch?
Oh, Lord, no. No. I'm sort of behind the eight ball on this one because I didn't have an NES growing up. My very first gaming system was a Super Nintendo that I got for Christmas from my grandma, past the objections of my parents. But I had multiple friends who had Nintendos. And so, you know, like Cherie said, I would go over there and I'd watch, and it would be fun. And, like, every now and then I'd get to play, even though, you know, if you're 7, 8 years old and your friend is over and just watching you play, you're like, okay, that's fine. you playing instead of me is not part of this algebra, but yeah, you can go ahead and watch me. I enjoy a crowd. So I didn't get a whole lot of opportunities to play NES games until later when, you know, I was grown up and the NES had sort of that retro value. I will say that the last time I played Punch-Out was on an arcade game. I was at an arcade bar in Chicago a couple years ago, and they had all, like, retro stuff. And so I put in a couple quarters on that, and I might have lost to Glass Joe. Yeah, I might have definitely done that. So, no, I have not beaten Mike Tyson.
Okay. So,
I have very not beaten him.
So I think you're actually talking about the arcade Punch-Out where, like, you were, like, that green mesh kind of character.
Yes.
Yeah. The NES has such longevity, though. Like, it kept releasing games until, like, 1990, 1991 regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even past when the Sega Genesis already came out and the Super Nintendo came out and stuff like that. But what were your favorite games for the NES overall? Like, what would be, like, your top 3, top 5?
Sharif?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
I need some time on this one.
I could definitely do my number 1 because it's my favorite game, like, regardless of console, which is Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, legendary.
It's just, like, not only is it just a great game in general, but if you look at 1 and 2, and just see how they just thought out the stratosphere when they made 3. I mean, I can't think of many games that have taken such a leap in terms of, like, everything, you know, with that game. And that game, you know, it really pushed the NES to the limit. I mean, the graphics on that when it came out were incredible. Like, you know, and like, this was, like, when the Genesis was out, you know? And so, like, so like, you definitely had, like, the Altered Beasts and these, like, 16-bit games that looked really great. And I thought Mario 3 actually held its own against these 16-bit games. I mean, it looked incredible.
Sharif, so, do you remember the Wizard, the movie The Wizard?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. That's what it made this world premiere, right? Mario 3 in that movie, right?
Yeah,
we got to make a note of that.
I went and saw The Wizard. I had my 3D glasses, and yeah, it was a big Nintendo commercial. I mean, like, they were using the Power Glove and, like, playing, like, Rad Racer and Double Dragon, and yeah, it was a total Nintendo commercial.
I need to watch that tonight or something.
Yeah, for sure. At the very least, I'm as soon as we hang up, I'm going to look up the Power Glove scene, because it is so – it holds up. And I mean, okay, technology-wise, no, it doesn't. But it entertains me every single time I watch it, every single time.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
We'll be right back with more Nintendo Talk with Adam Jacoby and Sharif Jackson.
What's up, y'all? This is Sharif, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Somewhat Fundamental podcast.
Power Glove, the U-Force. People remember the U-Force? I'm not even sure.
Was that like the motion one? Like the
It was the motion one. Yeah,
I slightly remember it.
Yeah.
I never used it, but like I kind of remember it.
I'm trying to remember like all the other peripherals for the NES. The Power Pad, which was
definitely had that. Yeah.
Yeah, which became the precursor to like Dance's Revolution or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I definitely had that because I was about to say it might not make my top five, but Track and Field was a very memorable game to me because there was like nothing else like it. Like you just had this big pad and like you just ran hard as you can on the floor.
Yeah.
Which if you lived like I did in these like kind of East Coast really empty houses that make a lot of noise, like. Like they just annoy the crap out of your parents when like you're like
right,
you know?
Yeah.
When like you're trying especially to beat like Bear and Cheetah and these other people in the game.
Yeah, so especially when you do like the triple jump or something like that, because you're just stomping on the mat when you're jumping.
Yeah.
And then of course there was the inevitable. Well, maybe if I just use my hands, maybe.
Yeah,
I gotta beat this one way or another, and I'm not fleet of foot enough. To beat this.
Yeah, I must admit, I did use my hands. I also did the thing where, I forgot what it was. I think it was a long jump where you jumped off the mat.
Right,
and then
yeah.
back on it.
Yeah.
You could do like an infinite long jump.
Other games that stood out for you? What about, say, the Mega Man series or Ninja Gaiden, RC Pro-Am, Contra?
Oh, yeah.
Obviously Contra.
Yeah, all...
Of course Contra.
Yeah,
yeah,
all great games. I would say specifically with Mega Man, Mega Man 2.
Yes.
I actually still, you know, I'm that geek. Like, I still listen to the music sometimes on my iPhone. I love the music for Mega Man 2. I think it has the best kind of bosses in it, like Airman and Woodman and all those guys. Specifically the Dr. Wily Stage 1 music I really enjoy a lot. So, I love Mega Man 2.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you have any games that?
Well, I mean, there are so many classics. Obviously, Legend of Zelda was totally revolutionized, and it had the gold cartridge, yes. too. And it's like, oh my god, gold cartridge. maybe the most endlessly replayable game, especially if you had a friend who was as good at it as you were, was RBI Baseball.
Oh, that was a great one.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I spent way too much time playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well. I'm not going to act like it's one of the all-time classics or anything like that, but...
Which one? Are you talking about the one-player one or the two-player
one? The one-player one.
Oh, I hated that game.
I know. I did
I,
too.
I beat that game. I beat that game.
Liar.
He is lying.
I'm not lying. I'm not lying. This is like my... the feat I'm... that I'm most proud of is that I beat Ninja Turtles 1. Seriously.
Jesus. Anyway, I didn't. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a really tough game because it's like broken all over the place.
But yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Sharif that Super Mario Brothers 3 was atop that list. And what I appreciated the most about it was a kid's game.
Yeah.
But in terms of the puzzle-making ability in it and all of the... trial and error guessing and this and that. It really challenged kids in a way that, and their thinking skills in a way that you don't really see in video games today, including the rest of the Mario games that we've seen since. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of, like, platforming skill that, that you have to have in order to beat, like, let's say Super Mario World. Or, Mario Paper, because I played that a little bit, because I had... well, no, I had friends who had the Wii,
yeah.
So... but mm-hmm. in terms of just being challenged on a mental level, there's been nothing like Super Mario Brothers 3, especially for such a widely accessible game as that mm-hmm. was. That's just such a rare, rare combination. And I think that it made... I don't want to say it made kids smarter, but I did just happen to know a whole lot of smart kids who loved that game. So,
just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it weren't for the whistles, Mario 3 is a super long game.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that's incredible.
Yeah. Like, even longer than, the ones that have been made since, like Mario World and Mario Galaxy. I believe that Mario 3 is the longest game out of all of them, I think, because there's, like, so many stages.
It probably is. And all the stages had, like, personality. Like, you kind of... Like they made sense in a Mario in a fictional world with pipes and dragons way, but like it felt like cohesive and it's like this might sound kind of like weird, but to me when I was a kid I felt like I could go anywhere, like I could fly up anywhere and find some little secret door, or I could like mm-hmm. Like it didn't feel as constrained as a 1 and 2, which I think was the biggest accomplishment of it. I mean, just the fact that the cover just had Mario flying on it, like mm-hmm. you just felt like kind of free. Like you just felt like I could like play it this like traditional, like the platforming way and never know what's like above me, or I could look really hard for the leaf and like fly up and like get this secret. Like it was just a really cool feeling that I think very few games even now kind of give you that like really like I can do whatever.
I can agree with that feeling, especially after seeing that Mario 3 commercial from a long time ago when they're all chanting Mario.
Oh yeah,
man.
I
totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it made me feel free. Any other games out there? Let's see. There's the Adventure Island series. There's the Castlevania series.
Both of those were great. They were so great.
Yeah,
yeah, I think Nintendo was often overlooked for sports games because mm-hmm. I played a lot of two games, Double Dribble,
yes,
and Tecmo Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I played both of these games a ton. Those were the games I usually played with my friends over, especially Double Dribble, because whenever you dunked in Double Dribble, it would show this super choppy like black and white.
Cutscene
of you dunking, and like
it was the dopest.
It was incredible, and like if you were on defense, you had a chance of blocking them. I mean, it was such a like I basically came from Atari basketball to that, and it just felt like you were playing like NBA 2K16 or something. Like it was amazing.
Double Dribble still has some of the best sound effects for a basketball game ever. Seriously, like the swish of the net sounds awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
the shoes on the floor and everything squeaking and stuff. It's so great still to this day. And that came out like 1987 or 88.
And like, even though Tecmo Bowl was unbalanced as hell, I mean, you could just pick like Bo Jackson and just run over everyone. It was so much fun.
Well, it's Bo Jackson. He's legendary, yeah, of course. So.
NES had two really great and again, really playable hockey games as well. I mean, there was your generic ice hockey, but then also Blades of Steel.
Which I know Sharif played in his recent one of his recent videos, too.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those were super fun, especially because it's not like they bore a whole lot of resemblance to, like, actual hockey. I mean, if anything, they had almost, like, basketball sensibilities. You know, it's 5-on-5. You move it down the court slash rink, whatever. You know, size matters, but speed also matters and this and that. And, I mean, it again, for what they were at the time, which was 1987 and 1988, just borderline revolutionary in terms of what you could do with a video game and the way that you could play sports at home. And I thought that was just so cool.
Yeah. The one thing I loved about Blades of Steel was how fast it was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love Double Dribble and Tecmo Bowl, but like they felt much slower than the actual games. But Blades of Steel felt super fast, you know?
Yeah.
And of course you can fight people, which is always a good thing. it was just great. And like the voices were good. It was, hit the pass. It's great.
Right.
It's great stuff.
Yeah. Nintendo was such a versatile system, had a versatile, lineup of software. And, we haven't even gone over like Double Dragon and, DuckTales.
They had DuckTales.
Yeah.
The shooters like Life Force and Gradius,
yeah.
River City Ransom. There's so many games, and their last huge hit, Battletoads, which I will probably never defeat in my lifetime.
No, nobody will.
Yeah.
Nobody will. Yeah,
it's a very tough game.
Yeah, so looking at the top five, I'm looking at IGN's top 100 NES games of all time. Their top five of all time is Mario 3, mm-hmm. Legend of Zelda, Mario 1, Mega Man 2, and Castlevania 3.
Wow.
That's 1 through 5 and not 5 through 1.
That's 1 through 5, okay, yeah. 1 through 5, yeah.
I'm kind of surprised at Castlevania 3. But I think part of it is that Castlevania never appealed to me as much as other players. Like, I realize it's a good game, but I never, like, really got that into it. Like the one I was probably most into was Castlevania 4 for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, me too, actually.
But like that was more because of the like Mode 7 scaling and that kind of stuff than the actual game. I don't know. Castlevania just never really, that series just never really did it for me.
Mm-hmm. Adam, any other series that you liked that may be underrated?
Oh gosh.
There are so many.
I know. And usually it takes something to sort of jog my memory. I mean, DuckTales, again, that was one where I just couldn't get enough of just watching other people play it. Like, I knew, like, I wasn't going to be any good at it or anything like that. And whenever I tried, I was like, I already died. I mean, Double Dragon, obviously, was one of those, like, successful arcade portovers that was just unbelievable. Metroid I mentioned earlier, but I mean, what a great game that was. Again, talking about how expansive these video game universes could be just sort of out of nowhere compared to what was going on before. I mean, Metroid took you hours and hours and hours to complete.
Yeah.
And like, the password system was by necessity. It wasn't just like, oh, you did well, here's your shortcut. It's like, No, you're not taking care of this in one sitting. No, especially not your first time. No way. I played the hell out of Excitebike growing up. I would always, you know, do the wheelies and then fall over, and then, of course, it takes too long. And, like, that had a level editor. There was a level editor in a game that was released in 1985, and it was, like, a working editor. That is insane to me.
Yeah.
And of course, if people don't know, the youngins today, that the Final Fantasy series started on the NES,
yep.
The Metal Gear series started on the NES as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it called? Metal Gear Solid, which is called Metal Gear.
Yeah, it was Metal Gear.
I never beat it, so
which,
I don't know.
Which I think, it has a ridiculous chronology, but I believe the Metal Gear Solid 5, the most recent game, takes place right before the NES game.
I'm totally lost on that one. I've only been Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I haven't been 3 yet.
Oh, I mean, the chronology is all over the place.
Wait, was Metal Gear, like, the NES Metal Gear, was that released in the States?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I don't think it was a huge game. Well, it was huge, but there was, you know, it had to compete with all these other games that we just talked about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We haven't even mentioned, like, Batman. Like, the Batman game was really good for NES.
Very good. I also think, in terms of underrated games, I really liked Skate or Die. I don't know if you guys... But that game was so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had it on the Commodore 64, so that's what I always associate it with, which is not very... accessible for like 99% of the other people that I talk to. Like, yeah, but did you play it on Commodore? What? No, it's a Nintendo game. Well, no, it's not. I never actually played it on the Nintendo, just exclusively on the little C64, but it was super fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 They made a Ski or Die as well on Nintendo.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I'm such a nerd.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just a perfect 80s skater game. There was another game, 720, which was like a skating game as well that I liked a lot. It was like an isometric kind of view by like Atari, which was very, very fun. You know, I feel like in like the 80s, if you threw skateboards or ninjas in something, like you were pretty good. Like, you could probably sell a bunch even if your game was trash if you just threw those in there.
Or a combination game. Like, why did they make, like, a ninja skateboarding game or something?
Ninjas don't use skateboards.
In this world, they do.
I feel like that's like, a grave disservice to the art of ninja. To be like, oh, now I've got a skateboard. Well, that's cheating. Ninjas don't cheat.
Yeah. Another ninja game, Ninja Gaiden. Another difficult game. Mm-hmm. That's another one that... I never beat the third one. There was a trilogy on that. So
those games were very difficult.
Yeah, the first one was
difficult.
Yeah, the first one was difficult. I beat that one. I'll say that. So, So basically, like, the Nintendo still lives on to this day, 30 years, and would you call this the best video console of all time?
Probably wouldn't.
It's tough,
but.
It's tough one. Yeah.
It's definitely probably the one that I have the most nostalgia about, but I still think the Super Nintendo is the best console of all time. But as you said before, in terms of mindshare, they probably won't be talking about Super Nintendo down the line like they talk about the Nintendo Entertainment System. So like it might not keep it from a historical perspective, but in terms of like personal favorite, I think the Super Nintendo really just maximized what 2D gaming could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Adam?
I feel like there are there's a top three, and to me the three are so different that it's almost sort of unfair to compare them, but for me it's really the Nintendo, the Super Nintendo, and also the first PlayStation. That really started that really kicked off the polygon gaming that has been endlessly refined since then. I mean, it looks cartoonish today, but you know, back then it was a really big deal, especially for sports games. And Electronic Arts made just an enormous amount of money adding realism to what were usually pretty limited 2D sports games. So, I think those are my big three. And also the PlayStation had just a ridiculously good library in a way that I'm not even sure that you could say the PS2 or 3 have matched yet or will match. So, I think those are right up there. You could definitely also throw in the Game Boy for the whole portable. The portable revolution. I've never owned a portable gaming system. It's not like I'm above it. It's just not something. There's no way I would have been able to own one when I was a kid. My parents weren't like that. And then, by the time I'm you know, an adult. I'm in college, and you know,
yeah, we're not thinking about these.
Yeah,
things,
I'm not going to own a Nintendo DS when I'm in my 20s, you know. So,
yeah.
So that I think it was more just timing for me. But in terms of what, you know, the consoles brought to the gaming industry as a whole, it's those 3/4 for sure.
Yeah, shout out to the PlayStation for turning 20 years old actually this year as well.
Dang.
So,
man,
yeah,
that is ridiculous.
Yeah,
1995.
Man, yeah. PlayStation can almost buy its own beer now.
Yeah, and you know, I was one of those haters that never thought that Sony or Microsoft would be successful in games. Like, I was just like, I was just like, these are big electronics companies, and they'll never get it. That, like, it would be kind of like when Philips tried to come out with the CDI and these other things. So I definitely had to eat my hat when Sony basically took over and Nintendo basically went in third place after the GameCube and Sony and Microsoft came out.
Right.
I really did not see that coming at all.
And then Sega was basically forced out. Like, they were done after the Dreamcast, so.
Which was a pretty decent system.
It was
it's a good system.
It was a great system. I mean, it only existed for like 2 years, but it had some awesome games. I mean, I played a lot of like Power Stone and Sonic Adventure and that kind of stuff on that system.
Yeah, and the NBA 2K series was really and the NFL 2K series was started on the Dreamcast as well. So
there you go.
Yeah, great sports games. Yeah,
we'll be right back with more from Sharif Jackson after this break.
Hey, this is Matthew Mercer, voice of Abe the Trapper from Evolve, and you're listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast.
I guess that's a transition to sports now, I guess, for a little bit, because, like, Adam is a Cubs fan, and I had no idea that Sharif was a Mets fan. So, how are you guys liking this series? I know they're playing Game 3 tonight.
Yeah, by the time people are going to hear this, Game 3 is going to be over, so I don't want anyone to spoil it for me while we're recording this. So, those of you listening, just, you know, keep it zipped for now.
They could be down 0-3 after once they hear this podcast.
Yeah, which that is possible.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I am not enjoying it a super amount yet. Sharif, I'm sure you're hating this too.
I've had to fight all this stuff about like Back to the Future predicting that the Cubs win this year and all that stuff, and David Wright being in a huge slump and all that, but. You know, I think that, you know, they're like my other team, the Giants in the NFL, they're kind of peaking at the right time. I mean, both the Cubs and Mets have gone through a lot of adversity. And, you know, I know that like Chicago, I think, is more excited for the Cubs than New York is excited for the Mets, to be honest. But this game is really going to decide it. I mean, it's in Chicago, like they kind of. I feel like they kind of have to win tonight, so they probably will. I definitely hope the Mets sweep it, but I think that the Cubs are kind of in a do or die kind of situation and that they will pull it out tonight.
Yeah, well, I have no horse in this race. I just find it amusing that you two have like both your baseball
and,
teams going against each other.
Yeah, so. and like I live in Milwaukee, and you would think that there wouldn't be a lot of bandwagoners here, but once it was pretty solidified that they weren't going anywhere, mm-hmm. a lot of people started wearing Cubs stuff. Just saying.
Yeah. I feel like the one thing that makes me sort of feel okay with however this NLCS goes down is like the Cubs have already taken out the Pirates and Cardinals. And they beat the Cardinals in pretty convincing fashion too. So it's like anything that happens from here is pretty much gravy. Like we not only did we advance, but we took out the rivals in the process. And it's not like there's some longstanding animosity between the Cubs and Mets. Like nobody in Chicago is like, we have to avenge 1969. I don't think there's a single Cub who was born in 1969. No, in fact, yeah, that's like 46 years ago. Like nobody cares about that, and half the players that were on that team are dead now. So, so Mets fans sort of know how it is for the Cubs a little bit. And we don't, right. It's not a rivalry. It's not a thing. So, you know, if mm-hmm. the Mets are better than the Cubs, then great. Mm-hmm. And if not, then greater.
Then greater. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's kind of that like situation where there's a bunch of games in Chicago. So, you know, I think that they're going to be very confident. I think that the Mets, I'm hoping, aren't a little overconfident, which I'm a little worried about kind of tonight, that they're going to be a little overconfident. You know, like there's still a lot of baseball left, and, you know, I'm just looking forward to, you know, hopefully a sweep. I'm not going to say a good series because I'm hoping that they sweep them. But, you know, yeah, it's a good time. This is like one of my favorite times of the year for sports because the NBA is about to start, like the NFL sure. is in full swing, and we're heading toward, you know, the World Series. So yeah, it's a good time.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the NBA, and Sharif, you live in Milwaukee, and there was just this incident about John Henson, basically being racially profiled in a jewelry store in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, he went to a jewelry store. He has a deal with a car company. And they basically ran his plates. They said that they thought the car might be stolen, and they called the cops. Cops came.
That's ridiculous.
And they came and apologized. But at that point, that's more, in my opinion, just saving face in public. I mean, they did what they did, and they,
for sure,
you know, they did it intentionally, and it wasn't like any, you know, any bad thing. In that area, Whitefish Bay, which I don't live too far from, definitely has that stereotype, which, you know, has been proven true to me personally and true in the
state,
that, you know, there definitely is some feeling about, you know, people of color in that area. Like, it's sort of like that area that when Milwaukee started getting more diverse, that, like, people kind of made this enclave and, like, said, all right, this is our thing. And we want this to stay a certain way. And there's a lot of suspicion around that stuff. I mean, it's like similar with some neighborhoods outside of Chicago as well. You know, it's very unfortunate, but, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people deal with like daily. And it's only getting attention because it's a professional basketball player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because, Sharif, because you were telling me about how Milwaukee is getting more diverse off record. So I was like, I wonder what you thought about when John Henson got, you know, racially profiled. And I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Go
ahead.
I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that there are a whole lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, you mean White Folks Bay? Yeah. So, like, it's a well-known thing that is, you know, a bastion of that really, really backwards-ass stuff. And so, you know, there were so many people who weren't a bit surprised by this that it's disappointing. But, I mean, it's, you know, like you said, it's like this in Chicago, too. And really a whole lot of northern urban areas. You know, everyone likes to take shots at the South. But in terms of the strict segregation, you see it a whole lot more in northern urban areas than in the south.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, recently there was a bar here that got big attention because they refused to serve African-American patrons, and the owner kind of came out and personally wouldn't let people in the restaurant. Luckily, there was enough of a uproar, and this restaurant was like a part of a nationwide franchise called $2, that they revoked their charter and they kicked them out. But you know, it's sad.
Yeah, it really is. So
here's the one thing that stuck with me about the John Henson thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, young black man, 6'11". Athletic, rolls up in a nice, like, dealer-type car to a jewelry store. Again, 6'11". How do you look at him and your stereotyping is so bad, you say, oh my god, a criminal! This is the easiest stereotype to make!
Yeah.
Your eyes should be like dollar signs, like the little cartoony pop-out things. But... How do you mess that up? How do you call the cops instead of the owner and be like, it is jackpot time?
Yeah. I mean, it's not rational. That's the only explanation, is that
these
reactions that people have are purely bred from the messages that we get in society and sort of like this subconscious kind of viewing of, you know, the black body, and they just don't even think. And that's not like an excuse for them at all, but I think that that's definitely a part of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know what else to say other than, like, this is just, this entire thing is just stupid, and I just hope to see less and less of that. And, yeah, I just feel bad for anyone facing that at all, you know, so. Anyway, that's about wraps it up, so, Sharif, tell us where we can find you on the internet, everywhere else.
Sure. So you can find me on all social networks at Sharif Jackson, S as in Sam, H-A-R-E-E-F as in Frank Jackson. Also check out my website, sharifjackson.com. That'll have my science blog, Science Looks Good, and my video game YouTube series, Gaming Looks Good, on there as well. So,
Great series about having diversity in gaming.
Yeah, thanks. And I also host the podcast Operation Cubicle with JP Fairfield, and I'm a frequent guest on the video game podcast Spawn on Me. So check all that stuff out.
Also, a Knicks fan, by the way. How many wins for the Knicks this year?
We're gonna match our preseason record. I'm just scaling that up. To be serious, 23.
Wow. Yikes. Yeah. That's lower than I thought. That's what you were going to say.
It's going to be a bad season. It is definitely going to be a bad season. I mean, I think that, you know, Phil Jackson isn't enough, man. Like, I think a lot of people thought that they could just bring him in and just, he would just work magic, but he needs stuff to work with. And so, like, between that and the fact that, you know, Carmelo, he's just not a leader. And the Knicks need, like, they need their best player to be a leader in terms of investing time and making sure that younger players learn the game. And he's just not that kind of player. And until we make some serious changes, I think, in that department, you know, I think Derek Fisher is a great coach, but he's just not. He just doesn't have what he needs to work with, and I think I'm fully prepared for a little over 20 wins this year.
Are you even more mad at J.R. Smith because he made the finals last year?
I was so upset that he made the finals. I was more upset than usual because every year, I mean, there's always a former Nick, like there's always like, you know, like Nasir Muhammad or somebody like that like even wins, right? So like, you know,
yeah.
But like J.R. Smith and like he was always tweeting about it and just being really excited. I was like, oh my God. Like, I just, and like, it was kind of irrational because I should be happy for him, right? I mean, like, he's a talented player. He, you know, obviously with his sixth man of the year work on the Knicks, but, you know, he just kind of mentally, he just needed to be in the right situation, and like, New York wasn't it. So I should be glad that he found his kind of home, but man, was I hating.
But screw him.
And Adam, where can we find you on the internet? I know you already mentioned this like on the last show. Like, everyone knows where you are on Twitter.
Everybody. They better, damn it.
Yeah.
And just search for Adam Jacoby on Twitter. You'll find me. And also blackheartgoldpants.com.
As for Adam's Twitter, make sure the underscore. Always important.
Always
the underscore. Yes. Otherwise, you'll find, what was it again? A forensics
teacher in Wisconsin who does not share my same comedic sensibilities.
Sharif might know him. I don't know.
I know. I'm going to send him a message like, hey, thanks for being on the show.
And he will inevitably respond, you're looking for the other one. Like, he doesn't even have fun with it. And I guess after a few years, you wouldn't have fun with it either.
What if this Adam Jacoby's also like Sharif's neighbor or something?
Maybe.
I don't know. We'll check it out. So, yeah, that's all we got. Thanks for wasting my time, guys. EJ Christian is back with me. What's up?
What up, brother?
How's it going? So this is sort of a tie into the main topic of the podcast today, but the Nintendo Entertainment System, as I talked to my main panel earlier in the podcast, it turned 30 years old in North America. It was released on October 18th, 1985. That's a long time ago, man.
It's a very long time ago. In fact, I remember... Well, this is weird because I was 5 when that came out, but I never owned my own one until I was 10, because I was poor.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but my cousin had one, so I would claim his beforehand, and for the first like 5 years of it in existence, I used to go to his house and play all that.
Right. Yeah, we all did. The main panel was talking to me about this, about how, like, they would actually watch someone else play, which, you know, these days, I can't imagine, like, other kids want to watch other people play. They would rather play, so, like, you know, watching others play. But
yeah,
that's how it was. That's how it was back in the day.
These kids, they have so much ADD, that's the problem. And this is why I can't relate to these kids anymore, man. No patience, man. No patience at all.
Yeah. Like, back then, we watched, like, someone else play, like, Mario Brothers 2 or 3, or we watched someone else play RC Pro-Am or Excitebike, Ninja Turtles. So many games out there. What were your favorites out there?
My favorite game of all time happens to be still my favorite of all time. And I think I've already told you this before in the past, but I'll say it again. Super Mario Bros. 3, still the greatest game of all time. It is a GOAT. I can still beat that game today, actually. Because it's funny, because I have the Wii now, and I actually bought that game on the Wii.
Yes.
And my wife and I, once in a while, when we get bored, we'll go on the Wii and start playing that game. And that game, to this day, still gives me the most enjoyment. Even more than Madden at 2K14, or whatever the hell the number on now. Super Mario Bros. Takes me back to a time, an innocence of the years I used to live, and to me, it's my favorite of all time, to this day.
Yeah, most of you guys know that I'm also a gamer, well, more like an old-school retro gamer sort of guy, and I did put in my Twitter bio for a while, Super Mario Bros. Expert. No joke,
I remember that.
I will still blast through 1, 2, and 3 to this day. Like, I know basically everything about that game. It's sick. So,
yeah,
but yeah.
That game is phenomenal to this day. I mean, it's not that the graphics are great. It's just that the atmosphere. That game has that whole stars aligning type of a feel to it. Like it's a perfect storyline, the perfect characters, the perfect levels, and just the way it was presented back then in 1990 was, because that came in 1990, by the way, that game. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you know about the whistles when the game first came out? Because practically everyone knew about the secret, you know?
I knew about it pretty early, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
And I wasn't one of those guys that would buy those magazines. I wasn't that nerdy about it. You have friends. You go to school. People tell you this stuff.
Yeah.
So you find out in school, hey, you know, you get a whistle at World 1 level on a castle. The first castle you go into in the middle of the map, you get the whistle, and then you can go again and you find another whistle level 3 or level 2 or whatever it is. I mean, yeah. But I got so good at that game so fast that I ended up not getting whistles anymore. I wanted to beat the game throughout, and I wanted to go to every single level, segment of the level.
When I first did that, it took me like 6 hours to do it. It was ridiculous. I played 6 hours straight just to go through every stage of that game, and I did it. So, you know, I'm not sure if I should be proud of that accomplishment, but yeah, playing a game for 6 hours straight, I mean, I know it's like not much to like those hardcore gamers, but 6 hours is pretty damn long.
Well, how old were you, though? Depends. I won't judge.
I was probably 12 or 13.
Okay, I mean, you're 12 or 13 years old. What the hell did you do? Unless you had cable TV, I mean, what else were you doing?
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? Oh, you're my age. Yeah. Come on. I mean, what are you really? I mean, today, you know, this is why this is like kids today. I'm sorry. I know I bang on kids a lot these days, but they deserve it. You know why? Because they don't know how good they have it now. I mean, you have YouTube. You have everything. Anything that keeps you occupied now is at your fingertips now. iPads, exactly. iPhones, everything you want is there. And back then, we used to appreciate these things. Because cable TV was, you know, you either had cable TV, you didn't have cable TV. You know, and there wasn't YouTube back then. There wasn't the internet back then. Sure, it wasn't that big back when we were growing up. So these things, you really appreciated, man. I mean, a video game and you would take time to play with it. Man, these kids don't know how good they have it now today. Seriously, they really don't.
Yeah, now they have, like, sure, we can find the codes, but we have to buy a magazine first, or we have to find through our friends, which at the time, as Adam Jacoby mentioned in the main podcast, because we talked about this too, about main forms of communication, you either had to make, you have to make friends in school, or go through the phone to communicate about this sort of stuff. Now, you can just go on the internet, just Google it, basically. It's like Mario 3 whistles or whatever, you know, and you can find it easy on Google. No problem.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
I was also a fan, more than anything else besides the game. You have the pad? Remember the pad, the running pad?
The power pad?
The power pad, yeah, I used to love that thing. The track and field game and the whatnot, best game ever. But other than Mario 3, the track and field game was the best.
I did think that the peripherals for the Nintendo were kind of ridiculous, where they had like the power glove, which only you basically use it for one game, and they had the U-Force, which is like the, you know, precursor to like all the motion stuff that's going on today now.
Couldn't afford a power glove, man. Sorry.
I couldn't afford it either, but my friends had the power glove. My friends had the U-Force, and it's like, they can really only use it for like one game or two, basically. It's like, okay, that's it.
No, I'll tell you a quick story about like when I got my Nintendo. So I revealed that, you know, like even though it came out in 85, I didn't get my first own Nintendo until I was 10 years old in 1990. And I remember when I got it for my birthday, I fainted. Like, oh my god, I fainted in the middle of the living room from school. And like, oh my god, I have my own Nintendo. I have to borrow yours anymore, you douchebag.
Were you like,
Were you like the Nintendo 64 kid that you that's on the YouTube video, that the viral video? Were you like that kid?
No. I was calm. I was never that guy. funny thing was, Nintendo was good for me, but I stopped. Not saying I stopped becoming a fan, but I graduated from that to Genesis probably 2 years later.
Yeah, because at that point, the Nintendo was at its last legs, and the Super Nintendo was already rumored to be coming out like the next year. So, yeah, definitely. Because video game systems, usually their life lasts for like about, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah,
so of course, like right now, like the PS3 is still going strong after 10 years, and the Xbox 360 is still going strong after 10 years, so
wait,
it'll be longer than that now.
They're 10 years old?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. 2005, dude.
And I own mine. So, no, I got mine in 2010, 2011, and it works great still.
Yeah, and right now the PS4 and Xbox One, like, it came out like 2 years ago, but like, because, you know, the software isn't as great yet, isn't as deep, so there's really no need to buy another system until then, you know. So.
I have no desire to buy another system. To be honest, my PS3 now is used now mainly for streaming. I might buy 2 games a year, if that. I used to buy 2 games a year, which was Madden every year and then 2K, and now
yeah.
I use it for my streaming devices and stuff.
Now, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I consider myself more of a retro gamer. These days, it's like,
right.
God, it's like a full time job being a game now. You know, it's
dude,
like,
but someone's gotta do it, right? Someone's gotta do the job, right? So there you go.
Yeah, they all last like 40 hours these days, and you know, we're all adults now. We have jobs, we have responsibilities, and stuff like that. So gaming is tough for like a 35-year-old these days. You know,
man, tell me about it. But there are moments though. There are moments when I get to like a vibe or to a groove where, like, I just want to put the damn thing down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We all get into that groove. But that's why, like I said, I consider myself more of a retro gamer. I'll put in Mario 3 whenever I want, you know, because that's a quick game. Like, these days it is, compared to, you know, those 40-hour monstrous games that they have these days.
If you're using those flutes, yeah, it's a quicker game.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other games besides the Mario series?
I hated Mario 2. Hated mm-hmm. that game. I still hate that game. It's not structured. I'm sorry, it's not structured. I was never.
Okay.
I didn't mind Duck Hunt. I wasn't a big fan. I love Mario 1 is pretty good. I like Mario 1. It's the original. Mm-hmm. You can't hate it. Never got into Zelda. Never got into Donkey Kong. I never liked those games, man. I never got into it. And I mean, they were really much getting stood out. I was a guy, really, to be honest with you, that didn't need a lot of games to be satisfied. Like, Mario 3 kept me, you know, occupied for a good 2-3 years. That's all I needed. Mm-hmm. And the track and field game did a lot for me, too, because, you know, you do the hurdles and stuff that. I wasn't a guy that necessarily needed a lot of games. I didn't start really becoming I can't really say I was ever a gamer, necessarily, although mm-hmm. I did play video games. Like,
yeah.
To me, the closest to me becoming a gamer I became was probably when I got the Genesis and started playing sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. The Madden, I mean, I've had every single Madden since 1990, mm-hmm. up until like 2010, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so I had all them. So the Genesis was really the only time I really had, like, gamer, if you will, tendencies. But that went only so far, to be honest with you, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we really can't deny the impact that the Nintendo Entertainment System had. The Final Fantasy series started on the Nintendo. Obviously, the Castlevania series, the Metroid series, Contra. We can't forget the Contra code.
Yes.
You know, everyone knew the Contra code. So it definitely had its mark in video game history. And it actually saved video games here in America because of the Atari crash and everything like that. So,
Tecmo Bowl also. I mean, Tecmo Bowl, but sports games are more than I think was getting. So.
Yeah, Double Dribble, Blaze of Steel.
Double Dribble.
Yeah. So, it had the lineup was so versatile for the Nintendo. Like, it had many good games.
It was. Yeah, it really was. Blaze of Steel, I credit Blaze of Steel to get me into hockey at early age.
Nice. Yeah, and of course, it helps that you also fight in that game, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double Dragon, of course, and their last big hit, Battletoads, which is, like, impossible to beat. Impossible. Yeah.
You know, so. I never bought the Super Nintendo. Like, because by the time it came out, and then I didn't really care about games as much anymore. So my dad had it. So when I go to my dad's house on the weekend, you know, my parents are married. So when my dad's house on the weekend, I go there, and one game I really loved with Super Nintendo was NCAA basketball, like 94, 93, whatever it was. And it had like these fictional like players and fictional teams. Well, teams were fictional, but I remember using Arkansas a lot back then. and it's when they were good with
Corliss Williamson, yeah.
Corliss Williamson, right, yeah, those guys, yeah. So, that stands out for me in Super Nintendo. But like I said, by the time Super Nintendo made their jump into like the mainstream, I at that point was a Genesis guy, and you know, I liked Nintendo, but I just wasn't as obsessed about it as I was before.
Yeah, Genesis was more popular anyway because of the sports, well, the sports games. Super Nintendo, like,
oh, yeah,
they surged late. They basically surged late, yeah.
Yeah,
but for the most part, Sega held the market on the 16-bit front. But yeah, Nintendo games. Yeah, after this podcast, I'm probably just gonna go play some Marvel Madness or something like that. You know.
But this is why the Wii is great too. The Wii has that marketplace. You can buy all the old games still and really relive.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that. I remember my wife and I. We went, like, a couple of years ago. We went to this is when Blockbuster was closing down for the Wii. So we used pretty much all the points or. Every point we had necessary to use towards like older games, so that's how we started playing Mario 3 again, and a couple of the games we started playing, you know. The GOAT, man, it's the GOAT. That's the Michael Jordan of video games, right there.
What was the hardest level in Mario 3?
Level 7, the pipes. I hate
that's
that
the
level.
Pipes.
I the hate pipes? That level. It's the word. Yeah, the pipes.
Wow, that's a little surprising to me because
I hate. Because everything's a f***ing flytrap. Everything's a Venus flytrap. Like, I'm not ready with a Venus flytrap. Seriously. Why is this harder than 6? Why is this harder than 8?
No, there's that airship in level 8 where it's like, where you're
easy,
up in the sky.
Easy.
That is not easy. The
well,
one in the slow. Sky.
Fix your fingers then.
Dude, I consider myself a Super Mario Brothers expert, and I think the airship in level 8 where it's going fast, scrolling so fast, that thing is a nightmare. So many jumps to deal with, and wrenches. Hated them.
I'm good with that, man. No, level 7 is the most annoying one. Like I love every level in that game, but level 7. But level 5 is my favorite. Skyworld.
Yeah, Skyworld's pretty good. Yeah.
I love the theme music too. I love that theme song.
EJ's singing, so I think we should wrap this up.
Oh my god, they're the
NES Mario 3, they will live forever. Thanks, EJ.
Goat, baby.
It's Kristen Ledlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
This pod is not done yet. As you know, news came out that The Gilmore Girls is getting some sort of revival on Netflix. A miniseries, about 4 episodes. So what better way to end a podcast with some Gilmore Girls talk with the Gal Pal Squad. Welcome back.
It's Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad.
So, it's been a while since we talked to the Gal Pal Squad, and I have with me Joanne. What's up? How's it going?
Hi, Ray. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, so the reason why I'm talking to the Gal Pal Squad about this is because, like, I'm so excited about the Gilmore Girls revival. Woo!
Woohoo! I did not see this coming, and I'm so excited.
I know, because, like, if people didn't know, I marathoned Gilmore Girls 2 years ago, and I went through all 7 seasons, and I felt unsatisfied by the ending, and, you know, as I read, the creator, Amy Sherman-Palladino, was basically, like, she resigned from the writing the last season. So.
Yeah, there was kind of a contract dispute, and so they couldn't get her for that last year, and...
Mm-hmm.
And she had originally, she said that she had some kind of vision for how it all ended. She even knew what the final 4 words would be. We will now get those final 4 words.
And now we're going to find out. And the thing is, like, the last season is, like, it really felt so different compared to like the first six. It was still okay, but it wasn't as good as the first six seasons. So now I'm excited about this. Like, yeah, they're finally gonna get it done. Although, you know, they're gonna do it without the actor who played Richard Gilmore because he passed away. Like,
yeah. Oh, so sad.
I know. Yeah. So, who was your who are your favorite characters in Gilmore Girls besides obviously the obvious?
I always enjoyed Paris Geller. She made me laugh so much. So much snark. She's the perfect biting comeback for everything.
Yeah. Out of the guys, because there's obviously, like, you know, there's Dean, there's Jess, there's Logan. Do you like any of those three?
I definitely don't like Logan.
Mm-hmm.
No. Jess had his moments. He mostly annoyed me, but then there's Dean. I really like Jared Padalecki a lot. He's on this other series, Supernatural.
Yeah.
So, like, I enjoy the actor, but I don't know if those two characters would really end up together. I'd be fine if they did. I don't know.
I was fine with it until, spoiler alert, Dean cheated on his wife. So
yeah, I think that kind of soured it for me.
Yeah, that soured it. Because
it was just a sweet, innocent relationship when they were kids, and then
they grew up.
I didn't care for that twist, really.
Yeah, people hated it when I mentioned, like, I didn't find anything redeeming about Jess at all. Like, I didn't find, I just felt like he was just, like, you know, the bad apple. I mean, I get that, you know, he's still finding his way through life or whatever, but he mainly annoyed me. And I only found him, like, really cool, I guess, on, like, his last appearance, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, for me, I was only invested in probably his relationship with Luke. It was only when he was in scenes with Luke that I probably liked him. And it was more about my interest in Luke's story than necessarily anything Jess was doing.
Yeah. And I definitely liked Luke as a character as well. Yeah, but definitely, you know, obviously, Lorelai and Rory are the main characters, and their chemistry is just so good, and I obviously like the way Lauren Graham just speed talks her way through everything.
Oh yeah. And so I love the relationship between Lorelai and her mother Emily.
Yes.
It's so complicated. It doesn't get easily resolved within one episode. Like, I like how there's always tension there, but yet they love each other.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect when I first watched the show. You know, I know my friend Nelson watched it. Other than that, like, okay, if Nelson watched it, then I know I'll like it because we're close friends and all that stuff. When I watched, I didn't think there would be, like, so many pop culture references. I think there'd be, like, they'd be speed talking to her way through everything.
There's just more pop culture references than you could ever catch. The way they're talking so fast and
yeah. Exactly. Like, I'd be amused because, like, I would catch, oh, Menendez Brothers. Oh, I know what that is. You know, that sort of thing. So, it kind of died down at the end, but, you know, I'm excited that they're having this revival so they can finally end it in true fashion, I guess, if what you would call it. You know, other characters like the Help Alien Band, Help Alien Band, Lane.
Oh, I like Gil. By Sebastian Bach of Skid Row.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to Lane and her Korean mom. You know, being all.
I love those stories in that family.
Yeah, you know, all the guys in Lorelai's life. Obviously, Christopher, her ex. So you know, it's really. Like it really captured my attention, and like I said, I marathoned all seven seasons like last summer. So, I mean, two summers ago. So after Dawson's Creek, of course. So what are your expectations on this revival coming up?
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's gonna be different though. Richard Gilmore, obviously, but like
more of the same.
I don't know.
And yeah, I expect they'll do some sort of nice tribute to him, to that character.
Yeah. any characters you think that might show up? Any new characters? I'm kind of afraid of the whole new characters thing. But obviously, like, you know, it's been like 8 years since the show ended.
Yeah, I mean, I expect that there'll probably be, you know, some new characters, but I hope it wouldn't detract too much from, you know, mm-hmm. all the regular characters of Stars Hollow that, you know, we've known yeah. and loved.
Yeah,
you know, we get a little bit of, yeah, like Taylor and Kirk.
The quirkiness of it all, yes. So
I mean, it's almost got the Simpsons like effect, like Springfield. Just so many tiny random characters. They might only show up in one scene, but
yeah, exactly.
It's just enjoyable.
Yeah, the cat funeral, all that stuff. So yeah, 4 episodes of Gilmore Girls on Netflix. I can't wait.
Each one 90 minutes.
I can get down with that.
I'm so excited.
I can get down with that. I think we should have like some sort of like, I don't know. Can we do some? Because like you're in Michigan, so I don't know. Maybe some sort of like watch party in a way. I don't know.
Honestly, when this is released, I'm gonna have to take a day off of work so that I can just flat out marathon watch all of these one right after the next.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. Thanks, Joanne.
This is Zach Harper of CBSSports.com. You're listening to Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast because Ray Ray is fundamental. You know, like those NBA commercials with the reading is fundamental. You get what I mean.
Super, super long podcast. Thanks to everyone that participated in this podcast. EJ Christian, Joanne, Adam Jacoby, and of course our guest, Sharif Jackson. So thank you so much for all the Nintendo talk and the Gilmore Girls talk from Joanne as well. So fun to do. Anyway, as for this podcast, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can find this podcast on Stitcher, on RareRay.net as well. And it'll be on syndication at the Happy Hour Network. Follow me on Twitter at The No Look Pass. And you can follow the podcast Twitter at RayRayIsFun. That is it. I spent way too much time podcasting. Just remember that RayRay is fundamental. And you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people, and I hope it's not 100 minutes long. Game over, yeah! Molded.